Al Jazeera Podcasts.
Today, Israel sees its biggest protests since October 7th. Benjamin Netanyahu has staked his political future on the war on Gaza.
You have the pressure internationally from the United States. You have the pressure from mediators who are dealing with negotiations, and then the pressure from Israeli society. So it's all mounting on him.
Will he survive? I'm Malika Bilal, and this is The Take. It's been an eventful few weeks for Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. On March 25th, the United Nations Security Council called for a ceasefire in Gaza. The U.S. abstained in that vote, and in response, Netanyahu canceled a delegation trip to D.C.
Netanyahu has said he will not be sending a delegation to Washington.
The Israeli Prime Minister is said to be furious that the U.S. failed to veto this resolution calling for a ceasefire, and he acted quickly.
On Sunday, angry protesters in Israel, along with opposition leader Yair Lapid, called for his resignation.
Anger at massive weekend protests in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, calling for early elections and a ceasefire deal to free the hostages.
We cannot imagine him not being replaced because he's driving us to the abyss.
That same day, Netanyahu went in for a hernia surgery. Meanwhile, in Cairo, the Israeli government resumes negotiations to reach an agreement for the release of captives held by Hamas. But talks have gone up and down. Hamas demands a ceasefire and the release of Palestinians held in Israeli detention. So I talked to someone who's been covering all of it. Hamda, welcome to The Take. Why don't you give us your full name and tell us who you are and what you do?
My name is Hamda Sanhout. I'm a correspondent here for Al Jazeera English in occupied East Jerusalem, covering all things, not just the war on Gaza, but also Israeli politics, how the war is impacting society here, what's going on with Palestinians in occupied East Jerusalem. So I have a lot of familiarity with the situation here at large, outside of just this conflict.
So let's talk about what we've seen over the last few days. Israel saw the largest protests against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his government since October 7th. Some Israelis are camping outside of the parliament building, the Knesset, in hundreds of tents lining the streets.
Demonstrators are gathering in front of the Israeli parliament and government buildings. Thousands of people are calling on the Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, to resign.
I know that you were there. What were those protests like, and what have you been hearing from protesters?
These are definitely the biggest protests I've seen, not just since the war started, but these are pretty comparable to the biggest protests we saw even last year when Israelis were demonstrating against the government.
In Israel, the country is being swept by massive protests against a core reform plan that critics call a threat to democracy.
The new law will limit the power of Supreme Court judges. Tens of thousands of Israelis blocked roads outside the Knesset to demonstrate against the bill.
Rallies have been held. July 2023, when these reforms against the judiciary had passed, well, at least one of the bills had passed, there was around 100,000 people protesting in the streets, blocking roads. And since the war started, there was kind of this consensus that there was a unity among Israeli society. They weren't really going to protest and take to the streets, and everyone was going to really back the war efforts. But as time went on, we're 6 months into this war, people grew really frustrated with the fact that the rest of the captives still weren't released, that Netanyahu wasn't offering them policies that they thought worked best for them, best for the state of Israel. People see that Israel's public image is kind of tanking in the international community, and they wanted change even before the war, and they want it more so now.
Wow. Did you talk to people? What were they telling you? And also, how are they received lined up outside the Knesset?
Well, look, to get these protests, you need to have a lot of permits from the police. You need a lot of planning that has to be done. So the reception in terms of the organization of the protest is fine because there is coordination with authorities. However, the permits are until a certain time. You know what I mean? And once those permits are over, they're going to come and clear roads however they see fit. What's not well received by the Israelis are people going to block roads and what they call sporadic illegal demonstrations. So if you're going to block the highway, they are going to use a water cannon on you. And we've seen them most recently on Sunday, not just use a water cannon, but use the skunk water cannon. This is an incredibly foul-smelling liquid that is so hard to get off of your clothes, your hair. And even if you do shower, I mean, it takes days or weeks for it to go away. If you get it in a car, I mean, like, you just buy a new car instead of trying to get rid of this smell. So when they deploy mechanisms like this, it's quite serious. So what we hear from protesters on the ground is actually the same, both in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. They want Netanyahu out. This has been the sentiment that they have been preaching for more than a year. And they say that he needs to go. There needs to be new leadership. A lot of them agree that elections probably are not the most ideal thing to have in the middle of a war, but they say that they need change and that it needs to happen not just now, but yesterday. So they're hopeful for this, but it's a little difficult to see exactly how that would come about. But these people say they're going to keep protesting, and they say that at this point, they don't really have anything to lose. So they're going to keep taking to the streets, not just on weekends, but here we've seen it 4 days out of the week as well.
Wow, a four-day event. Well, among the protesters we know are families of captives in Gaza, and Netanyahu met with some of them before having hernia surgery on Sunday. That evening, he also gave some remarks, hitting back at criticism that he hadn't done enough to bring the captives home.
Anyone who says I'm not doing everything I can to bring back the hostages is wrong and misleading. And whoever knows the truth and is still repeating the lie is causing unnecessary grief to the family of the hostages. The truth is that while Israel has flexed its position in the negotiations, Hamas hardens its position.
How are people reacting to all of that?
It's interesting because the prime minister says that bringing back the captives is one of his main goals. It's one of the most important things. But on Saturday, there's usually a rally held by families of these captives. And it's quite peaceful. It's not a march. It's just family members begging the government to do something to bring back their loved ones. And last week's tone was quite different. They said that they were really angry. They were really frustrated. They wanted people to take to the streets and set the country on fire because they were so fed up with just peacefully demonstrating. Protesters, family members say it's really hard to believe because there still hasn't been a deal on the table. And he says that Hamas's demands are too much. They would put Israel at risk. Whereas what have the family members been saying essentially since the beginning? Give them whatever they want. An all-for-all kind of exchange, like empty out the Israeli prisons with Palestinian detainees inside of them. Give them whatever, just bring back our loved ones. And Netanyahu said he won't do that. And remember, he's got a government of ultra-right-wing people, ultra-nationalists, some of them who are settlers living in the occupied West Bank. These are people who say there shouldn't be any Palestinian detainees in Israeli jails released. And it's caused quite a lot of contention within Netanyahu's own government because some of them have said if he releases thousands of Palestinian prisoners, they're going to quit the government. And then it kind of would go to an election. So there are a lot of X factors here that Netanyahu has to tread so lightly around, and he's trying to navigate it all. But still, there's been no real results or outcome from that.
As pressure mounts on Netanyahu, what does it mean for the future of the war on Gaza? That's after the break.
Get your news in less than 3 minutes, three times per day, with the Al Jazeera News Updates. Just ask your home device to play the news by Al Jazeera or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
So, Hamda, I want to talk about some of the other protests we've seen, because while anti-government protesters have faced various forms of crackdown by authorities, the reality seems to be different for those who've been protesting against aid headed to Gaza.
They march with determination to the Kerem Shalom border, their mission to block international aid from crossing into Gaza.
They should get only the minimum calories required to survive. No a single loaf of bread should go there till our hostages are coming back.
Have you been following those protests? Do you see a difference?
We have been following those protests. So initially, those protests were not exactly approached in the same way. We should add that those protests certainly are not as big. I mean, you're looking at, on a good day, maybe 50 people who are protesting in Israel's south, trying to block aid from getting in. And you know what? In the early stages of these demos, they were successful in that. You had police initially who were reportedly given orders not to really do much about those protests because it was a small number of people who were really right-wing kind of activists trying to block and sometimes successfully blocking this aid. But then there were directives from the police to not let that happen. They can't block roads the same way people in Tel Aviv can't block roads. In terms of the force used in protests in Tel Aviv or Jerusalem, certainly that was not used at the crossing in the south. But, you know, you do have police who are kind of removing people from the street, trying to force them to do otherwise. But there certainly was some discrepancy in how the demonstrations were treated. But at the same time, you have to remember that you're looking at a protest of 50 people versus maybe 10,000 people.
So, Hamda, you have been covering all the various protests, the calls for snap elections, the disgust with the government. I want to take a step back and talk about something that has broken just in the last few days when it comes to the network that you and I both work for. We know that the Israeli Knesset passed a law on Monday giving the government temporary powers to prevent foreign news networks from operating in Israel if they're deemed to be harming national security. The Knesset actually calls it the Al Jazeera Law.
Israel's parliament has passed a law which could allow a potential shutdown of foreign broadcasters in the country, including Al Jazeera. The Knesset voted overwhelmingly in favor of the law, which Israel has been pushing since the beginning of its war on Gaza.
The Israeli communications minister, Shlomo Karhi, said following the passage of the law that there will be no freedom of speech for Hamas mouthpieces in Israel. Al Jazeera will be closed in the coming days.
Al Jazeera says the accusations are slanderous and jeopardize the rights and safety of its employees worldwide.
How is that impacting your reporting, and how will that impact foreign media coverage inside Israel and in Gaza? What can you tell us?
At the moment, our teams are reporting from occupied East Jerusalem, and we will continue to do so. We will continue to cover this story until told otherwise. In terms of how it will impact news as a whole, I mean, this is such an important story. And think about our colleagues in Gaza, you know, and other Palestinian journalists in Gaza. We wouldn't know what's going on there if it wasn't for those journalists. The same way you wouldn't know what's happening in Israel without journalists. So we're still waiting to see essentially what's going to happen. But foreign journalists are such an important part of any story and really bringing it to the viewer for everyone to see what's actually happening. And remember, the state of Israel is still in technically a state of war, a state of an emergency government with emergency laws. So they can do essentially whatever they want, whatever they deem to be a threat to their national security in this time period. But at the same time, journalists like us do have an obligation to cover this story. And until we are told otherwise, we are here committed to bringing our viewers the facts.
So then I want to step back to the news for one final question, because truce talks, they resumed on Sunday.
Mediators initially wanted a deal before Ramadan, but the Muslim holy month is now more than halfway over. Well, for more, I'm joined.
But on that same day, Netanyahu said his military is preparing to launch an attack on Rafah in Gaza.
We will go into Rafah and eliminate Hamas battalions there for one simple reason. There is no victory without entering Rafah.
How much public backing does he have to go ahead with this plan? Because we've seen discontent with the government, but does it actually translate to discontent with this war?
You know, there is a lot of public support for Israel's war on Gaza. The attacks that happened in October were something that are now cemented within the Israeli society as a collective trauma among them. So there is widespread effort for the war. And while people are not necessarily fans of Netanyahu, they are fans of the war effort. And he has said publicly in many interviews that he is enacting policy that is widely supported by the Israeli public. I mean, if you look at some of this polling, it'll tell you that most of the country supports an invasion into Rafah to get the job done, to defeat Hamas. Three quarters of the country doesn't support humanitarian aid going into Gaza after this humanitarian disaster that was single-handedly caused by Israel's war and attacks on the besieged Palestinian territory. So there is widespread support for the army, for Israel to continue whatever ground invasion that it plans to. Even though there is not that support for Netanyahu, there is still support for these policies. People want to see the fall of Hamas. They want to see an absolute victory in this war, and they want to see the release of the remaining Israeli captives. And something that is tied into all of this is that Netanyahu and the army have said that, like, once they go into Rafah, that's the final stretch of the war. But of course, there are no guarantees. Once they go into Rafah, you're talking about 1.5 million Palestinians who are seeking refuge in that city because they were told to go there. And there's nowhere else for them to go. I mean, the rest of the strip, 70% of it, has totally been destroyed. There's no safe place for any Palestinian in Gaza. I mean, there wasn't when this war started, but especially now, it's difficult to kind of envision where exactly the Israelis will want to put all of these Palestinians, what their plan is. There is so much left for the Israelis to think about, but in terms of their own assessments, they say that they're ready to do it. And actually, most of the population is supporting those efforts.
And that's The Take. This episode was produced by Siri El-Khalili and Khaled Sultan, with Amy Walters, Nagin Oliayi, Chloe Haley, Miranda Lin, Ashish Malhotra, David Enders, Sonia Bagat, Zaina Bezer, Veronisa Campana, and me, Malika Bilal. Our sound designer is Alex Roldan. Alexandra Locke is The Take's executive producer, and Ney Alvarez is Al Jazeera's head of audio. We'll be back tomorrow.